This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations. The Trump administration's airstrikes on the Syrian government's targets last week have escalated tensions with Russia. The Putin regime is Syria's most powerful ally, and within just hours, U.S.-Russia relations went from thawing to ice cold, as Russia denounced the airstrikes. Mainstream media sources that had been beating the drums of U.S.-Russia collusion and of Trump being in Russia's pocket suddenly turned giddy with delight at the Syria strikes. In what may have been one of the very few positive headlines about Trump since he became president, the New York Times wrote, "On Syria attack, Trump's heart came first." After a public outrage, the headline was later changed to, "Acting on instinct, Trump upends his own foreign policy." My guest is Norman Solomon. He's the coordinator of RootsAction.org and the executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, and he's been following these stories closely. Welcome back to the show, Norman.
Thank you, Sonali.
So let's first talk about the fact that in many ways, U.S.-Russia relations seem to have been reset to the standard tension that has existed between the countries that elected officials and the mainstream media has seemed to crave over the past year, right? We don't know whether it'll stick, but at least on the surface, it now feels like business as usual with the U.S. and Russia.
Reset to a familiar downward spiral. It's really a double whammy in terms of the way that the missile attack on the Syrian target has buoyed and definitely put the Trump administration on the upswing in terms of U.S. media image. First, there's the almost always dynamic where when the U.S. president launches a missile attack, there's a swoon from the U.S. media, you know, that no Americans are going to die. American technology has hit some target of a country or forces led by a foreign leader who's been demonized and villainized. And so that certainly fits the bill. We've seen that for decades and decades. One launch of missile attack after another, out of the blue, often seemingly, and the U.S. press just loves it and elevates its quality and quantity of coverage, particularly the quality of the coverage. So presidents generally can rely on that. But there's a second factor here as well. As you noted, ever since he was president, Trump has been bashed and attacked quite appropriately in most cases by the U.S. mass media. And it was really a 180. All of a sudden, he's a great leader. Well, notoriously, we had Fareed Zakaria on CNN saying that he had become president by launching an attack. Again, this is not only enthusiasm for U.S. technology being used from afar to strike a purported enemy, but also Trump now moving away from his comments for many months that he wanted some form of detente with Russia. And so, long story short, the political and media establishment of the United States has been ecstatic that Trump has moved towards confrontation with Russia.
And let's also sort of contextualize the fact that this particular set of strikes was the first time that the U.S. government took aim at targets of the Syrian government. However, the U.S. has been bombing Syria, killing Syrian civilians, all of that under the rubric of and the framework of the post 9/11 military authorization for war, which was arguably covering those strikes because they were supposedly aimed at the Islamic State. But they could in no way be used to justify that authorization after 9/11 could in no way have been used to justify a strike against the Syria government, right? Didn't Obama in 2013 attempt to ask Congress for that authorization?
Well, there was, you know, a lot of vacillation on what should we ask for and so forth. And certainly in terms of Syria, back a few years ago, there was an abortive attempt by Obama to ask Congress. And when Congress pushed back after the British Parliament turned down such a request from the British leader, the White House just backed away and, you know, didn't even ask, did not attack in that particular year. But I think what we've seen is that ever since a few days past 9/11, when Congress voted the authorization for use of military force, that authorization has been stretched beyond the breaking point. It's an absurdity that it's been used for a drone war going on in many, many countries on several continents by the U.S. government. So here we, as you note, have a situation where now the U.S. has launched a missile attack not only on non-state actors, but on an actual other government. And it just goes to show that we have this mania, what Martin Luther King Jr. called the madness of militarism, that is the baseline. And the media of this country, the corporate media, overwhelmingly, push comes to shove, are enthusiastic about launching an attack on some other designated enemy country. And it must be said that the Democratic and Republican Party leadership, such as it is on Capitol Hill, also, with a few exceptions, went into swoons and rhapsodies of approval when this attack was launched on the orders of President Trump on the base of the Syrian government.
Right, and let's get to that. But just a quick note on the issue of congressional approval. In 2013, Trump tweeted to Obama, "The president must get congressional approval before attacking Syria. Big mistake if he does not." And Trump's tweets tend to be his own worst enemy as president. Let's talk about media coverage. You mentioned how many mainstream media commentators swoon when we have wars. All of a sudden, they become utterly patriotic. We saw that in the lead up to the beginnings of the Afghanistan war, the Iraq war, and Brian Williams made just a ridiculous comparison of or swooned over U.S. weaponry using a Leonard Cohen song lyric to do it. Trump was apparently seen as being presidential for the first time. Why is that? Why does the media love it when the United States launches wars so much?
Well, even literacy goes down the tubes, down the toilet, as you mentioned. That's just a poignant and, you know, just one of many terrible examples, but a metaphor as well. Brian Williams at NBC, who was trying to use a Leonard Cohen song the way that Ronald Reagan used Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, as I remember, in his reelection campaign in 1984, until Springsteen told him to stop it. And so what Brian Williams did is turn a song by Leonard Cohen on its head upside down to mean the opposite. Cohen was decrying this kind of mindless, sadistic militarism, and Williams cited it as some sort of wonderful approval. More broadly, it's that the separation between press and state, between the media and the U.S. government, the dominant media, is a very small separation, and it almost goes to the vanishing point when the flag is raised and the missiles are fired from the direction of the United States. And this has haunted us, has plagued us, has caused so much misery and suffering for many decades, going back to the time of the Vietnam War, where one time after another, not only the misinformation and sometimes disinformation that has been uncritically parroted by the U.S. media, but also an embrace, a sort of tonality and enthusiasm and adrenaline that is literally sometimes conveying a kind of thrill. And so this is where the correspondents, the pundits, the reporters on cable news, as sort of the first line of conveyance of information when the launch goes on, it conveys to the public that, oh, we ought to be excited, happy, feel that sort of adrenaline push. And this is, again, the kind of a militarism that has kicked in again. I think it should be said that the partisan aspect is very pernicious and corrosive, because there were many Democrats who were pushing from the top of the party as well as from the base that Trump should be denounced as a flunky for Russia. And then when Trump orders a very dangerous missile attack a politically and geopolitically dangerous missile attack on Syria, then he has basically done what, perhaps unwittingly, some Democrats have been calling for, which is a military confrontation with Russia, given that Syria is a very close ally of the Kremlin. Mm-hmm. So we've got a dangerous dynamic here where I would argue with that without them thinking through the implications of their partisan attacks on Trump as a Putin puppet, so many Democrats have fueled this war machine, have tried to turn it, again, unwittingly or not, to put Russia on a collision course with the United States military. We have several thousand U.S. nuclear weapons pointed one way or another towards Russia, several thousand pointed from Russia to the United States. What kind of leadership from the Democratic Party would be, as it has been, would be goading and hectoring and baiting Trump to show that he's really not a tool of Vladimir Putin? Well, we're beginning to see the results of that propaganda campaign. And I think it's shameful, it's dangerous. It increases the chance of a nuclear holocaust. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists editors just in January of this year moved the so-called doomsday clock hands even closer to midnight, when there would be nuclear annihilation, basically, of the people and life on this planet. So how can, in good conscience, liberals, progressive, Democrats, anybody say that the solution to our current problems would involve heightening tensions with Russia? In fact, it's quite the opposite. If we're going to take seriously and we're not going to be in sort of denial about the very grave danger of nuclear holocaust.
Right. And it's not just that, you know, we in, on the issue of U.S.-Russia relations, for the majority of Republicans are united with Democrats, too. Right. The Trump administration stood out from most Republicans. You point out in your article that John McCain and Lindsey Graham are probably thrilled to have tensions resume between the U.S. and Russia after the Syria attack.
Well, that's very true, that the sort of ultra-hawkish wing of the Republican Party, represented by McCain and Graham, has had this agenda all along. They see as very positive an increasingly confrontational mode between Washington and Moscow. And the only reason that some of the Republican leadership in Congress has not been totally with that program is the way in which the intervention in the U.S. election issue from Russia has been framed. So they wanted to, and even Fox News over the fall and winter had been trying to downplay Russia as a threat, you know, counter to their usual mode. And in a way, there's been a sort of a flip in terms of the party as a whole, where traditionally the Republican Party has been the most hawkish towards Russia. It still is to a large extent, especially in the last week. And now that the pressure, including, I would say, from the mass media, from Democrats, certainly from the CIA and the traditional military-industrial complex, especially because the pressure on Trump to prove he's not a Russian puppet has had some tangible effect. In other words, the missile attack on the Syrian military base. So it's moving in a very bad direction. And I think it's essential that whatever we call ourselves, whether we want to label ourselves progressives or anything else, it's important that we recognize that a kind of deranged partisanship has caused many to try to depict Russia as our enemy, and that Trump must show that he's not going to cooperate with Russia. That's bass-ackwards. That's insane. Our agenda, our hope, is in scaling down and bringing down the decibels and the tensions of any conflict between Russia and the United States. Our enemy is not Russia. Our enemy is war internationally, and particularly the threat of nuclear war.
Right, and so-called humanitarian intervention has long been used as a ruse for war by both Democrats and Republicans. In fact, Democrats are the bigger experts on using that. And so this idea that we can't stand by while the Syrian government kills its own people, which of course the Syrian government is doing along with the United States, right? Reportedly Ivanka Trump was the one who convinced her father. There's now some sense that she was so moved by the horrific images of the victims of the chemical attack on Syrian children that she may have influenced Trump's decision. But it would be nice for Ivanka Trump and her father maybe to sit and look at photographs of the airstrike that we conducted in Raqqa in Syria just a few weeks ago that killed civilians, right?
Well, absolutely. And the United States has been aiding and abetting and directly participating in the slaughter of thousands of children and others in Yemen at the hands of the Saudi Arabian Air Force. We really need a standard of human rights that is not hypocritical. You know, ever since, back a century ago, chronicled in the book, The First Casualty by Philip Knightley, in the last many, many decades and even centuries, propaganda has been the lifeblood of rationales for one war after another. And if we have a single standard, then we condemn all of those who could be called war criminals, those who run the Saudi government, those who run the Syrian government. That doesn't give us some good reason to add to the slaughter by throwing more bombs into situations. There is no reason to believe that sending more missiles or troops into Syria does anything but heighten the violence and make a horrific situation even more horrific. And that really is our challenge, to right. call for alternatives to simply stepping up the violence.
And by the way, Sean Spicer really stepped into it on Tuesday as well, revealing his utter lack of historical knowledge in justifying these airstrikes against the Syrian government. He said, when you come to sarin gas, Hitler was not using gas on his own people the way Assad is doing. Yes, Hitler did use gas. He used chemical weapons, he used gas on his own people in a far worse way than Assad is doing, Norman. It's just kind of shocking to see this sort of stuff coming out of the press secretary's mouth.
We're having really this confluence now, and it's really become awfully tangible in the last, 10 days or so, where what gets called the neocon policies and what gets called the liberal interventionist policies, say, represented by John McCain and Hillary Clinton, they are now in great control of events, at least recent events, and it remains to be seen where it goes. But there is a huge bipartisan push to further militarize U.S. foreign policy and to go out and kill a lot of people in Syria and, frankly, elsewhere, with the sort of assumption that that makes things better. Now, it may make things better for heating up the Cold War with Russia. It may and will make things better for the military-industrial complex and using more weapons that will then need to be replenished. It may even help the U.S. with its very aggressive positioning, expansion of NATO up to the Russian border. But for humanity, for what is ultimately our national interest in the United States as well as elsewhere, I don't mean Wall Street and the military-industrial complex, I mean people's national interest. This is a horrific turn of events. And that's why at rootsaction.org, we've launched a petition and also a way that people within 2 minutes can message as constituents their two senators and congressional representative to say, we need detente. We don't need military confrontation with Russia because the threat of nuclear annihilation is very real. Let's reduce that threat and danger instead of exacerbating it.
That's rootsaction.org. We'll post a link to that from our website later today. Norman, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Norman Solomon. He's the coordinator of rootsaction.org and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.